Welcome to the Prostate Pros Podcast. I'm Dr. Mark Scholes here with my co-host Liz. We want to guide men to treatment success so that they can become their own expert.
There's been a lot of back and forth, and there's a lot to take in here. Ultimately, we're talking about a blood test.
We are talking about a blood test, and these guidelines have changed because we've learned a lot about different types of prostate cancer. Some are deadly, others not necessarily. Choices.
I've had patients, I had a patient today who said, can you just tell me which one's right?
Have to choose between surgery, radiation, hormone therapy, and chemotherapy and other options. And they can come with side effects like erectile dysfunction and incontinence.
It was 3:45 in the afternoon. I got a call from my doctor, got some news to report, and I didn't hear anything after he said cancer. Every other word he said after cancer is lost on me right now. I just knew I had cancer. And it hits them like a truck because feel healthy, no symptoms, no family history from my family.
I think it's also a really good reminder that young men, even in their 40s and 50s, need to be vigilant.
And need to get in and see their doctors, which is hard to get them.
Okay, Dr. Scholes, this is a big topic.
The idea of assembling an optimal treatment team.
Can we start with which kind of doctor should help?
Yeah, that's the easiest part. We only have a limited number of players. Everyone knows the urologist, of course, the surgeon who's been managing this field now for 100 years. And then in addition, just to summarize this quickly, we have radiation therapists, we have radiologists, those are the people that take the pictures, we have pathologists, the ones that look at biopsies. But that's not the whole team. We also have family members, support groups, we have people that think they've been through this and they have all the answers. There's a lot of people that get involved in this process.
Okay, so how should a new patient approach, weeding out which opinions they should listen to?
I think that's a wonderful question because many times they don't have all the choices you think they should. Prostate cancer is sort of a backwards industry. It's the only type of cancer that surgeons are still in the primary care position. People say, how can this be? All the other 100 cancers out there, breast cancer, colon cancer, lung cancer, brain cancer, they're all managed by medical oncologists, specially trained doctors that only do cancer. Urology is sort of a throwback, and this is a result of a time 40 years ago when all cancers were managed by surgeons. There was no other treatment back then. But technology has evolved so quickly now that as we see it in 2019, prostate cancer is the only one where the surgeons are still in control. Does that mean that you have to go to a surgeon for your care? No, not necessarily. The reason that surgeons take over care is because they're the ones that do the initial biopsy. After doing the biopsy, they're the one that has to inform the patient whether they have cancer or not. People should be aware that centers are springing up all over the country that use targeted MRI biopsies. It is possible to be evaluated now in this modern era for a biopsy without seeing a urologist. Who's going to take care of you in that scenario? Anybody that you choose. You can choose a medical oncologist, a radiation therapist, or a urologist. And of course, the bottom line issue will be how much experience do they have treating prostate cancer.
So in choosing a doctor, is it important that patients get second opinions to avoid bias?
Absolutely. The issue, of course, is that most patients are going to be diagnosed by a urologist. They'll have undergone a random biopsy, and they're going to be told that, in many cases, that surgery is the best option. Urologists are surgeons. Patients need to be bold, and they need to be willing to ruffle feathers. Doctors and patients build very intimate relationships with one another, and no one wants to hurt anyone's feelings. And I'll have to confess, as a doctor, some of us have a little bit more ego than we should. But this is your life. Your quality of life and your longevity are at stake, and making optimal treatment decisions is totally essential. Having the boldness to get a second opinion after a diagnosis has been made is very, very prudent.
Okay, but if patients are taking the time to get a second opinion, does that affect treatment rates? Should patients be treated right away?
I'm glad you're touching on this because with most cancers, time is of the essence. And this is the type of things that we all tend to be familiar with. We hear about the bad stories of some poor person dying of lung cancer in 6 months or 9 months. tragedies after tragedies. But with prostate, studies have clearly shown that a delay in treatment of 6 months or more has no impact on long-term outcomes. How can this be? It turns out that prostate cancer is a totally different entity from all the other cancers out there. Most people are familiar with the idea that it grows very slowly, that it doesn't spread easily, and that it's highly curable. Precision is essential because the treatments, in many cases, can have more side effects than the cancer does. Second opinions, even third opinions, are almost mandated to make sure that you get the best possible care.
Okay, so if a patient can't get into a different doctor for, say, 4 to 6 weeks, does that ever cause them to rush into treatment with the original doctor?
Yes, people get scared. That word cancer, I liken it to the word racist. The brain turns off and the emotions kick in when we hear these horrible pejorative terms. And even with prostate cancer, we try and use these adjectives like it's a mild cancer, it's a friendly cancer, it's a low-grade cancer. And think how ludicrous that sounds when you say something like it's a mild racist, it's a friendly racist. It just doesn't compute. Everyone thinks they know what cancer is, and they believe instant action is necessary. Re-education is essential on this, that prostate cancer is very distinct. When I first got into managing this, I was trained to treat all the other cancers, but I chose prostate cancer specifically over 20 years ago. And I got into this field, and I thought prostate cancer was going to be like all the other cancers. And it took me a little while to recast my thinking and understand that this is a unique type of an illness. Ralph Blum, my co-author in Invasion of the Prostate Snatchers, the book we wrote together, he said, Mark, after all this working with you and all my years of living with prostate cancer, I think we need to consider prostate cancer a chronic illness, not a cancer.
You're a medical oncologist, which is the type of doctor that treats all different sorts of cancers, but you've specialized in prostate cancer. Is your specialty as a medical oncologist something that all men with prostate cancer will see?
Unfortunately not. And this is one of the motivations for writing my book, The Key to Prostate Cancer. I realized that throughout the United States, there's less than 20 or 30 prostate oncologists. This specialty is so underserved in the medical oncology field. So patients are going to be forced to educate themselves. 180,000 men are diagnosed with prostate cancer every year, and with 20 or 30 prostate oncologists, it's going to be impossible for them all to see specialists such as ourselves. But the good news is, with time and study, men can learn about the condition and become quite sophisticated. They have great resources through support groups, and they can also focus on the type that they have. This is something we haven't covered yet, but there are many different stages. And online, we've created a website, keytopc.com, keytopc.com, that allows people to punch in their PSA and their Gleason score and find their stage. Once men know their stage, they can focus on just learning about that stage instead of trying to become an expert in everything.
Okay, so is it a good idea that men know their stage before talking to experts?
Yeah, one analogy I've used is going in and buying a new car without doing your research and figuring out the invoice price. People that know what the dealer bought the car for are in a much more leveraged position to get the best deals. Doctors who are talking to patients who have some of the vocabulary mastered and understand their stage are going to be much more respectful, much more circumspect, and much less likely to just offer what they feel is, and honestly, in their best interest. We have a problem in prostate cancer in that surgeons want to do surgery, radiation doctors want to do radiation. They all present themselves as trying to find the best treatment for the patient. And they're certainly, I have no doubt, trying to do so. But there's a gigantic financial conflict of interest that distorts the playing field. Patients can protect themselves against this by being well educated and understanding their stage.
So this quiz is on key2pc.com, and it's just 4 to 6 easy questions, and you'll need your medical records to be able to answer them. Have you had it happen before where a patient comes into your office believing they have a different stage than they do?
Yes. I think in the general sense, Liz, the problem is that word cancer. So patients may have done some research and realized that they have what sounds like a low-grade process, but a Gleason 6, we call it, the type of prostate cancer that doesn't spread. But I really believe down deep into the tips of their toes, they can't really believe it's incapable of spreading. That word cancer has caused a poisonous root in their hearts and minds. And honestly, these people come in the office with these harmless cancers and they're shaking like a leaf. They're so frightened of what we're going to tell them. They're afraid of the disease and they're afraid of the potential treatments. After talking for a while and reiterating these facts that there are certain types of prostate cancer that don't spread, that really shouldn't be called cancers, they start to relax. But I've had patients that we followed for years that are still struggling with anxiety about the possibility of these low-grade cancers spreading, even after they've been watching it for 10 years. Fighting fear is a major challenge for all of us. Facts are usually the best way to counter that fear.
Do you think that lays into how patients tell their families about the cancer?
Oh, thanks for bringing that up. Because when men have these low-grade cancers and buy into the idea that they can simply watch it, and of course, I'm not trying to imply that all prostate cancers are low-grade, but it is very common. Probably 40 to 50% of prostate cancers are low-grade and can be safely watched. Once these people go home and talk to their families about watching cancer, imagine what the initial thought is. My God, what kind of a horrible doctor is this? Or, gosh, Dad is going into denial. He won't admit that he has a deadly illness. These assumptions are logical when you compare this with, say, other types of deadly cancers. I've counseled many patients to be very slow in revealing their diagnosis of prostate cancer to the people around them. It's hard for me to explain prostate cancer, and I have been a professional in doing this for over 2 decades. Imagine how hard it is for these beginner patients to try and explain to their family members how they have this condition called a cancer that doesn't act like a cancer and that actually can be safely watched. I always counsel people, go slow in revealing the diagnosis until you're comfortable that it's really going to help and move the situation forward. With other types of cancers, of course, you're talking about potentially deadly disease. You need to get a support group around you. And I would counsel people to be much more forthcoming. With prostate cancer, go slow.
Uh-oh, this has happened to me. What am I going to do? But will it be successful? And who I get to see and how many people I should see and on and on. And what you're building then is an attitude toward a whole information change, a whole information circuit. And those people that can continually provide you with the information, and that's your attitude, and that's called attitude that leads to good survival.
And the group has been just so meaningful to me in terms of learning from our wonderful participants and getting to watch them teach each other about how to get through the cancer journey.
The guys don't get maybe a good chance out in the environment to talk to other people who have had prostate cancer or who have it right now. So it's the camaraderie of the sharing and seeing each other. And it's kind of like the unification of a group towards a common effort. And the effort is to survive and survive in the best way possible.
Our group was founded in 1990 by two men that started out meeting in their kitchen. It was just a small group of men. It's interesting, though, that half of our newcomers come to us by referral of friends and relatives.
So you mentioned support groups, and there are so many great support groups and conferences, like the PCRI has a mid-year conference and a yearly conference where hundreds of men with prostate cancer get together and they share and they learn from experts. And these can be great ways to not only educate the men, but also educate the families. joining a support group can be a great way to get involved with other men that have it and share your stories and maybe learn new updates or about therapy that worked for them or didn't work for them.
Mm-hmm. And in addition, of course, one of the great things about support groups is all of these participants are seeing doctors. And word of mouth in the support groups is an excellent way to find out who the most experienced and sophisticated prostate experts are. So support groups are a wonderful resource in that sense, and it's a place where everyone has the same disease and you can be comfortable talking about all these aspects.
Prostate cancer is a silent disease, and a lot of men may feel very alone, not wanting to speak about side effects, just the whole intimate aspect of the disease. And support groups can be a great place to hear other men speak about that and become a little more open in your own life.
We all need that emotional support. And the that's the good side of this troublesome illness, and that's the camaraderie that men can get, and even to draw families together. We've been talking and emphasizing the early stage prostate cancer, but there, of course, are other more advanced types that are more challenging and require seriously intense types of treatments. And that subject is a little bit more like the more familiar types of cancers we've talked about. This whole idea of making a distinction between different types of prostate cancers is essential. When I hear someone says they have prostate cancer, it really doesn't tell me much. Yeah, now you're a member of a club, but what part of the club do you belong to? Are you in this harmless type, or are you in a type that needs more aggressive treatment?
Prostate cancer can be slow-growing or fast-growing, metastatic or non-metastatic. It can be resistant to treatment. So there's a whole bunch of different kinds of prostate cancer, and everything about the experience needs to be personalized, from choosing your doctor to deciding on treatment to how you tell your family. Okay, so keep listening to the Prostate Pros podcast. Consider joining a support group. Check out PCRI.org to look at the conference coming up at the beginning of September. And remember that June is Men's Health Month. And if there are people in your life that aren't getting their PSA tested, it's a great time of year to urge them to do so. It helps catch prostate cancer at an early stage, and it's an important part of your yearly checkups.
Thanks so much for listening. It's a pleasure to be able to reach out. There's so much to learn, and I'm bubbling with ideas on how we're going to help empower you, the listener, with the information you can use to help others.
So subscribe to Prostate Pros on iTunes. You can reach us at podcast@prostateoncology.com.